going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You can put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Logan Gordon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, it is a Thursday, May 22nd, we are underway this hour on Flames Talk with Logo. My name is Pat Steinberg on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts, and live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. The moving sale's on now. Save big on safes, smart locks, keypads, and more. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.
Would you believe I still get my podcasts from LimeWire?
Watch out, that thing leaves viruses.
Some real interesting things happen to my computer.
He's Logo. I'm Steinberg. We're here at the Groundworks Downtown Studio. We got a busy hour ahead for you on Flames Talk on this Thursday, and we're going to kick it off with a treat. Now, you hear this gentleman weekly, twice weekly on Sportsnet 960 The Fan, but for the first time ever, this gentleman is joining us on Flames Talk. I'm a very, very happy camper because it's time to say hello to Adnan Virk. And for the first time, brought to you by Power Play, perfect for date nights, family outings, or corporate events. Power up your playtime at powerplay.ca. And now Adnan Virk joins us from Amazon's Monday Night Hockey, NHL Unscripted, Virk and Demers, and a whole lot more. Virky, baby, how we doing?
Patty, we're back. I'm loving the energy, buddy. It's coming blaring through here 3,000 miles away. You sound fantastic. I love Logo with the shout to LimeWire. God, makes me think of streaming music back in the late 90s. Fantastic, boys. Rock and roll. Let's go.
How we doing, man?
You know, it's funny. This morning, I just drive one of my boys to Philadelphia. He had a field trip. It's about 2 hours from my house. So I dropped him off at the Rocky Steps. He's 13. And I'm like, yeah, I go, this is this movie you haven't seen before. It's called Rocky. You know, it's a little silly. It's, you know, it's a fictional movie character. But he just beloved this movie. He's like, oh, okay. I go, I really can't think of anything else like this. You know, you wouldn't imagine in Calgary a fictional character so beloved in Toronto and New York, wherever. And then I start telling him, you know, it's not bad. So this box, you know, he's got Sylvester Stallone. I can tell my son really doesn't care. And then eventually I go, and to be honest, it's a little overrated. He's like, well, Taxi Driver should have won Best Picture. It's absurd that Rocky won Best Picture for Taxi Driver. But the movie to watch is Rocky IV. Which I did watch with my eldest son, who's turning 17 this Saturday. Watched it last week. I don't know if anybody, I mean, surely there's somebody out there listening. Not you two guys, but there's probably Shan. Shan doesn't watch any movies. Shan, I told you to go watch The Godfather Part 2, then go watch Rocky 4. It's so bad, it's great.
Well, and I am excited for Shan to give you his Godfather Part 2 review in a little bit, because that has me very interested, which I'm I don't think you'd be surprised by. So I'm looking forward to that.
It was for you, Pat, because he said to me, Logan goes, give him a movie. And I go, The Godfather. And he goes, I've seen the first one. Which is a hysterical comment. Like, you and I both know the masterpiece that it is. I've seen the first one. And after that, I'm like, I don't see anything else. Like, I'll get a punch in the rest of it. Even though Godfather 2, widely described as the greatest sequel ever. I saw the first one. I think I got the gist of it. Thank God he watched the second. Go ahead.
I just stopped at The Phantom Menace, and I didn't watch any more Star Wars. I just kept it at that.
Shrek 2 was enough for me. Toy Story 4? No, thank you.
Before we dive into that fun, it's a show called Flames Talk. So, you had an opportunity. We saw you at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome once this year during the season. You did multiple Flames games when they were on the road on Monday Night Hockey. We've been talking Flames with no games for more than a month now. But what were some of your observations? How did you see the Calgary Flames this year when you saw them in person?
Well, I'm so glad you're asking me, Patty, because it was, like, to me, one of the feel-good stories of the NHL season. There wasn't one person who follows the NHL day in, day out, who said at the start of the season, the Flames would be a playoff team, and nobody was saying that during the season. And then by the end of the year, you go, I've got to take them seriously. They're still alive. Like, to me, it was a remarkable story, much like my beloved Flyers a year ago, when no one expected them to be a playoff team. The Flyers were for much of the year, then faded late and abyssing it. But I said, who would have thought the Flyers would play meaningful games 80, 81, 82, and the same could be said for Ryan Huska's team. Short on talent, long on desire, great work ethic. Huska is going to coach as a catch. You guys know, great with the media, funny, disarming, charming. And, of course, I love Nas. I thought he was amazing for the Flames, especially down the stretch. He's such a great leader. Huberto's a great dude. The biggest thing we noticed, Patty, covering 25 games, you know, going to every room of the pregame skate, the Flames just had a great room. Unless they had all of us duped, and I'm including John Forsen and Joni Shelley and Thomas Hickey and me and Andy Petrillo and Blake Bolden. Everything we went through, like, everyone's just in a good mood. Peter, the PR man, we love him. He's great. I mean, anything you needed, these guys were so accessible. Andy was joking. She talked to Dustin Wolf the day of the game. It was Flames and Leafs. And unfortunately, Wolf, he didn't have his best game. The whole team effort was not strong. And she was saying, Pat, it's like talking to a starting pitcher the day of the game. It doesn't happen. If Justin Verlander is pitching, you don't talk to him that day. And she said, God, what a nice guy. And then after, she's like, he's never going to speak to the media again on game day. But it was just an example of how refreshingly kind and accommodating the Flames were. So that goes a long way with me. They knew we're being ambassadors for the sport, ambassadors for the great city of Calgary. I thought it was a great run. And props to you guys both. Whenever I needed a nugget or a stat, both of you were always helpful, especially late in the year when I text you, who should I speak to? I think I was in Colorado. And it was Flames Avs, yeah. And Logo goes, talk to Mackenzie Weegar. You love him. He was great. Great guy, funny. Obviously a big fan of the station, big fan of you guys both. It was great.
What were, because you sat down with Weegar this year. I know you had to sit down with Nazem Kadri this year. Like, what were some of your Flames takeaways from some of those exclusive chats you had?
Well, the big thing, I find Naz fascinating because I was working for MLSE, you know, my peripatetic journey. I went from the score for 6 years, then I worked for Leafs TV for 1 year, and then I got my dream job at ESPN, away we went. But that 1 year was when Naz got drafted. So what I said to him was, I remember what a big deal it was when you got drafted, particularly being Muslim. You were the first, you know, Muslim player drafted in the first round, and it was something special to me, my community, et cetera. So I said, I remember all the hype and excitement around you, and then it's been an interesting journey. He was a guy who was a good player but not a great player, and it seemed like he got in the doghouse with management at times. Lamorello, of course, loved him, but Dubas didn't. And, you know, feisty, too many penalties, too many untimely suspensions, like Naz doesn't know what he's doing, immature, et cetera. So I just said, your journey is amazing, because I remember living all that stuff in Toronto and seeing it. And now with the Flames, I mean, not that old, you're 34, but like, you're this wizened leader. And he's laughing. I remember the stories of Kadri, immature youth, and, you know, partying too much, Toronto, whatever nonsense they were saying. And now he was like a real leader. And I said, you know, how much pride do you take in doing that? He said, a ton. And I said, you can always tell certain guys, Patty, they just seem like natural-born leaders. I'm sure his whole life, Naz is a guy, because he's loud and you know, rambunctious and flamboyant, and he wants to be a guy who's the best player on his team. And I tell you, man, it's one thing to walk the walk, but he can talk the talk. Some of those late goals for the Flames, you know, it was amazing. Late March, those goals he was scoring, especially in overtime, clutch time. We're watching the Knicks right now here in North Jersey, and Brunson's a great crunch time player. That, to me, is like Kadri. Like, when the chips are down, this guy always steps up. And it was fun reading his book, because we got the interview and I found out he'd written a book. So I read it like in 4 days. And one of the cooler stories is about that hat trick he scored in Colorado. I mean, that was amazing. The cup final, with all the pressure and insults that were being thrown at him about his background, his heritage. I mean, he's a first class act, man. I'm always rooting for Nazem Kadri. And I love the fact the way that image of him being at the time, maybe, you know, unbridled youth to now a wizened leader. The Flames are lucky to have him. And by the way, I'm sure you guys talked about it. The whispers were that if they wanted to trade him, he would move his no-trade clause. He didn't want to. It was like, no, I'm not going anywhere. Like, he was very happy to be a member of the Flames, proud to stay there. Of course, there would have been a desire to get a guy like him for a team in the playoff push. So you can always respect and admire a guy who wants to be there in Calgary. And as for Weegar, great stuff. Again, Logo had fed me some questions, you know, asked what it was like for Huberto to get rid of his sports car coming from Florida. And on camera, I think Weegar kind of laughed. While the guys have adjusted. Then off camera, he goes, I'm pretty sure he still drives his Porsche. I started laughing. I said, well, it's tough for certain guys to get rid of their sports cars, no matter where they are. And we were talking about Calgary being a sister city of Denver and the different aspects of it. And even Husk was telling me, like, you know, he goes, Weegar's like an underrated defenseman. He goes, unless you watch him day in, day out, you don't appreciate how defensively responsible he is. Coronado, I liked a lot, too. I was talking to Thomas Hickey about him, you know, Harvard guy. What's that like? I talked to him a little bit. I think I did like a quick, you know, bench interview with him, but nice guy, certainly lots of promise and expectations. And of course, Wolf, I mean, to have a goalie who's up for the Calder, like, to me, that speaks volumes about just how special he was. And if you're a Flames fan, you go, okay, we're definitely short on offensive talent. We know that. We need to have more firepower, but we played a defensively conscientious game. We have a great goalie who's a goalie of the future. Like, how could you not be optimistic? And one of the big things I remember asking Huska, and I remember this vividly. I said, when you have a team which isn't strong in offensive talent, my word's not yours. He's like, uh-huh. And he kind of says, he goes, well, I don't agree with you. So, you know, you're not taking a shot. I'm just, we're being honest. This is not an offensive juggernaut. What do you do? And he said, shot volume. And he said, you know, the analytics today, and this has been, I'm watching every game going, oh my God, yeah, how is there only 13 shots on goal through two periods? Like, this is not the hockey I remember as a kid. And Huska told me, he goes, because of the analytics now, teams just don't shoot as much. They're like, it's better to, because what happens is if you're just always shooting the puck, you're giving up puck possession. And analytics now prove there's so much power in puck possession. So hold, wait for the perfect shot, and then fire. And if you don't, well, whatever. He said, but I don't agree with that, particularly for this team. He goes, because we don't necessarily have that offensive firepower. So shot volume is one of the keys I emphasize to these guys. Just get pucks on net, and eventually deflections will go, rebounds will come. That's how we're going to have to win these games.
What's caught your eye in the postseason so far here? Probably lots of talk out your way about the failure of the Toronto Maple Leafs once again.
I had a good rip on NHL Unscripted logo. I my stint on our sister station, the Fan 5-9, they ran a piece of it, me and Jason DeVers, having fun, of course, at Leafs expense. Something like a little schadenfreude going a long way. And it was funny because you and I were gloating logo last week after they had lost that Game 5. Leafs are going to leaf. And then I was astounded when they won Game 6 with a shutout. I said, oh, my God, I'll have real egg on my face right now if the Leafs actually come back and win Game 7. But, of course, they are the Leafs. They had to remember who they were, and they completely fell apart. I mean, to have that kind of a performance is just so painful and so wretched. And I was born in Toronto. Toronto's a world-class city, but it's got a team that is just not emblematic of its fans and its city. And once again, they fall flat on their faces. It's just, it's embarrassing, quite frankly. And every year, it's been so funny to look, who's the different fall guy? Dubas, oh, that nerd with his stats. Get rid of him. Okay. Keith, nobody likes him. All right, fine. Get rid of him, too. And now it's Shanahan. Finally, like for 10 years, this Shanahan plan, we've been waiting forever for this thing to work. At long last, Brendan Shanahan will realize, yeah, clearly wasn't me. And their stubbornness to keep the core four together. And as I said to you last week, Pat wasn't with us. But, Patty, I love Bradtree Living because, of course, when I met him and interviewed him, he said, I used to listen to you all the time on 960. Because you with Boomer and the guys, big movie talk. I'm like, oh, yeah. So I'm rooting for Tree. But I remember asking him, why didn't you deal Marner? Why didn't you make some sort of move with the core four? And he said, the hardest thing to replace in this game is high-end talent. Mm-hmm. So if I trade Marner, just because – and it goes, again, I haven't been here for all these playoff, you know, flops, quite frankly. If I trade Marner, he's an A-plus player. We can all agree on this? I'm like, yeah, 100-point player, Selke finalist. If I trade him, I'm not going to get an A-plus back. I'm going to get two B-pluses. And I would now, if I could talk to Tree again, I'd go, yeah, but that A-plus plays like a D come playoff time. So trade for the two B-pluses who might elevate and become A-minuses. God love Scott Laughton, former Flyer. Like, he's not going to be scoring big goals in the league. Everyone knows that come playoff time. So no matter what now, the core four is going to be done. Marner's going to go sign somewhere else. Maybe Tavares signs somewhere else. But, God, Matthews, what a no-show. I mean, one of the biggest reasons the Leaf haters can rejoice is that when the Leafs are the underdogs, they don't win. And make no mistake, against Florida, they're the underdog. I know they had home ice, but the Florida Panthers won the Cup last year. So the Leafs are underdogs. But they don't win. And when they're up 2-0, they don't win. And when they're the favorites, they don't win. And my biggest challenge with them is, why don't your star players ever step up? Like, just like I said about Nas, like when the Flames were in the playoff hunt, he was elevating his play.
Yeah.
Right now for the Panthers, their depth is incredible. Like that Game 4 win, they had three defensemen. Sorry, the Game 5 win, they had three defensemen score against the Leafs, six different goal scorers. Last night we saw it in the Stars game. Okay, I get the fact that Sagan's a star player, but he didn't really play like at this play. I mean, it's four goals, for God's sakes. Like, their stars don't necessarily step up. It's just a collective team effort. Where is that game where Austin Matthews just puts his team on his back and scores a hat trick? Where is that end-to-end rush by Willie Nylander? Where is that moment that Marner goes, I got this? It doesn't happen with these guys. It's unbelievable. You can sit your watch to it. It's been going for 58 years. They'll try to find another scapegoat. I guess it's Shanahan for now, but I don't see it changing anytime soon.
Would you, if you were Treliving, would you try to bring back Marner and Tavares? Would you bring one of them back? What would you do?
I try for Tavares. I don't think he necessarily take a hometown discount, although as a Toronto guy, I know he loves playing for the Leafs and wants to be there. He's tight with our buddy Thomas Hickey, so he's told Hicks how much he loves Toronto. But at the same time, I always laugh at your hometown discount. Like, well, how much of a discount? Like, if it's 4 for $6, $24 million a year, but if some team's offering him, yeah, look, ask Steven Stamkos about loyalty. All of a sudden, the Predators could be $8 million a year. Yeah, I'll take it. See ya. So, I mean, Tavares, choice, I think you go to him and go, what? Yeah. Hey, Johnny T, what's going to make this work? Can we get 4 for $6? And like, I'll see. And all of a sudden someone offers him $9 million a year. He's gone. I would not re-sign Marner. It's just too much money. And again, he's great in the regular season. There's no question about that. But come playoff time, he's been a flop. So I would try to re-sign Tavares. I wouldn't say on the cheap, but a relatively team-friendly deal. He'd probably tell me to buzz off logo. And I'd go, okay, fine. Both these guys are gone. I'll go make some other moves.
Conference finals, Panthers and Hurricanes continues Thursday night. We saw Game 1 Oilers and Stars. Finally, somebody does to Edmonton what they've done this entire postseason, and massive third period comeback. That Dallas team, I mean, look, we talk a lot about the Oilers here, obviously, with them just being north of us, and we've talked to you about that team a lot this year. You spent some time in Edmonton for Prime, but you know, that Dallas team scares, like, that team's going to win a Stanley Cup with that roster. I have that feeling. I don't know if it's this year or not, but I can't see them walking away with this core without a cup.
We had Marty Turco on the latest podcast, Logo, and he made a great point about Ottinger. Like I said, how fearful are you? This guy's going to start to break your records. He kind of laughed. And this is interesting. I want you guys to watch this next game. He said Ottinger might have the best blocker of any goalie he's ever seen. And I burst out laughing. Like, I don't think anyone's ever said that about any goalie. You always talk about his glove hand, right? It's always, name your goalie. Mike Vernon, Grant Fuhr, Ed Belfour, all what a great glove hand. You know, glove saving a beauty, et cetera, kick saving a beauty. You never say, look at this guy's blocker. But I'm going to watch it now intently. He goes, I've never seen a goalie who's so good with his blocker. He goes, Ottinger is amazing at it. And he said he's clearly going to be a bright light for this team. But collectively, this team, top to bottom, is just ridiculous. And that's why I said to Demers, I go, the number one thing, again, of course you need star players. As Huska said with the Flames, they need top-end offensive talent. Of course you do. But the one word I keep thinking about when it comes to the Stars and the Panthers, and we've seen it time and time again, is depth. It's a two-month marathon. It's not a sprint. You've got to have different guys step up. It's why, for years, Washington Capitals fans always remember a name like John Drews scoring in overtime, right? It's Peter Klima scoring for the Oilers, double OT against the Bruins. Like, it's the guys who are in the doghouse or have been forgotten, but all of a sudden get that moment, because you can't just rely on, you know, Tkachuk or Ben or Hastings, whoever it is. But Hastings, by the way, coming back to the Stars, is absolutely massive. I mean, as Demers said to me, Thomas Harley has been really, this is coming out party. Like, I think a lot of average fans may not have known who he was. Some at Four Nations, how special he was. Now you've seen him continue that play. And Hastings is a better version of him. So just to get him back, that feels like a massive boost. And to win that game against the Oilers, like, man, Knicks put their pedal off the metal and the Pacers come back. And similarly for the Oilers, you've got that game in hand. But their PK is atrocious. I couldn't believe the numbers, guys. 62% is their penalty. You can't win a Stanley Cup with special teams quite that porous, considering the fact they victimized the Kings so much in the power play the last 3 years. I believe their power play rate was like over 90%, if Jack Michaels is to be believed. So Edmonton's got to clean up that penalty kill. That's a massive win for Dallas. And it's funny. I picked the Kings to win in six, Edmonton won. I picked Vegas to win in six, Edmonton won. So I vowed to not pick against the Oilers in Edmonton again. So the reverse jinx is working. I said Oilers in six. Looks like the Stars will probably come through and win it.
Marty Turco was one of my favorite goalies growing up. The way he could handle the puck, one of my all-time favorites growing up. Him and Mike Modano. Who am I thinking of on the back end, Pat? Yuri Lehtinen was there. Daryl Sador was
Dallas?
There. Yeah.
Sergei Zubov, Darian Hatcher. Yeah.
He played some pretty good years there in Dallas.
Yeah, I said the same thing to Marty, and he laughed. He goes, well, thanks for making me feel old. And I'm like, well, I'm 46. He's 50. It's not that much of an age discrepancy. But I'm with you because I've always had a fondness for puck-handling goalies, going back to my love of Hextall. And you're right. Turco with the puck was unbelievable. Even Demers said they coined a phrase for it, the Turco turn. Because he was so good at handling the puck. And, of course, you know, we saw Brodeur like that. When you have a third defenseman as a goalie, it's amazing the kind of talent they have.
Okay, before we let you go, we need to hear Shan's review of The Godfather Part 2, which I fully endorse as the choice that you gave him last week on Sportsnet Today with the boys.
Yeah, so what we've done with this is, obviously, with Verk and his history of cinephile, is we found out playing Wildcard Wednesday the last couple, I guess, years with Shan. He doesn't watch traditional movies, so we stole a page from Verk's past on Sportsnet 960 with movie reports with Peter Klein. We're making Shan do it. So last week, Shan, you got The Godfather 2. Impress the cinephile himself with your review of this movie.
Well, that's the scary part, is I was trying to write a movie review, and I'm like, I don't think I've ever done anything like this. So let's figure it out. I wrote in chronological order a few points. Child Vito in the opening scene looks like Adnan. Robert De Niro used to be a very handsome lad. Mm-hmm. I wrote, absolutely love Hyman Roth, and then in brackets, okay, never mind. Basically, if people seem nice, something is wrong. And then the last point I had is Don Ciccio deserved that one. That was he probably deserved more than that. And then just wrote a quick little synopsis. A
lot of buffas.
I've grown up with movies in my time with like unbelievable visuals. It's hard for me to get into older movies, but it wasn't a problem with Godfather 2. That was cool. I like the element of not knowing what's next. Specifically the gunshots that absolutely annihilate the mics they used back in 1974. There are some times where I've got to turn the volume up and then I got to turn it down. It's going to blow my ears apart. Getting to know Vito's backstory was cool. Watching the family fall apart throughout the movie was painful, and I knew it was coming, but Fredo's death made me gasp. It was when I knew it was coming, and it still made me audibly gasp. But my final statement is the casting in the series is perfect, which I guess it makes sense. You just cast Italians, and I don't like Michael.
Pat and I can obviously go for hours on this, but I'll simply point out how great, because my favorite scene, it was an abortion, Michael. Yep. It was an abortion. How about Pacino's eyes bulging out of his head? That's as good as screen acting yet.
We need a review, like a rating.
Oh, yeah. Is there a five?
Yeah. Well, out of five, Virk, does that work for you?
Yeah, out of five. Let's do it.
And I've rated movies on my Letterboxd, and I'm not super generous. This gets a 4.5.
Wow.
4.5.
Oh, my God.
4.5.
That's a fantastic movie.
What's next for Mr. Virgie before we talk next week? Because Pat shakes his head at me.
I think Rocky IV should be on that list, Shane. What do you think? Come on, have you seen it?
Rocky IV?
Yeah.
Shouldn't I watch the first three?
No. You don't have to watch the first three. Just go right to Rocky IV. This will be quite a jarring contrast.
Okay.
You're going from Godfather 2, one of the great American movies ever, and then you're going to the guilty pleasure nonsense of Sylvester Stallone. Rocky IV. It's like 85 minutes. I watched it a year ago. Trust me, you'll get into that. You're going
to
love it.
Okay, I'm in.
I'm looking forward to that. Virk, all I can say, Hyman Roth always makes money for his partners. smaller slice, and... what a pleasure having you on this program. It's been too long. You are a gem of a human, and I look forward to hearing Shan's review of Rocky Part 4 on Sportsnet Today last week. Thanks for hanging out, bud.
Of course, Patty. Been too long, man. Love you. Love Logan. Love Shan. And, of course, Michael, we're bigger than U.S. Steel.
Well done. Well done. Bye, Virk.
See you, boys. Thank you.
Adnan Virk of Amazon's Monday Night Hockey, of NHL Unscripted, Virk and Demers, Major League Baseball Network, NHL Network, and a whole lot more. And now, brought to you on Sportsnet Today and this week on Flames Talk by Power Play. Woo! Perfect for date nights, family outings, or corporate events. Power up your playtime at powerplay.ca.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Thursday edition of the program rolls on. It's Pat Steinberg and Logan Gordon along with you on this Thursday. And Thursdays on Flames Talk, we catch up with our goaltending expert. It's time to go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline and say hello to Kevin Woodley of In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. Joining us on this Thursday, not from his usual headquarters in the Lower Mainland and Metro Vancouver, but instead joining us in the Alberta Provincial Capital. Woodley, what are you doing in Edmonton? What prison sentence? What have you done wrong?
Well, first of all, I'm back in Alberta for the third time in the last 2 months,
yeah,
and it's raining here. So I don't know what the deal is with me and the weather. For a change, it was sunny and beautiful in Vancouver. I guess for you guys, I should expect this out of Edmonton, but I better be careful in case there's any Edmonton people listening in. No, I'm here for Volleyball Nationals are here this week and have been before for this. It's at the Convention Center, and my daughter's last year of club volleyball, so U18 and provincial champions, and I think they're hoping to finish up their career with a national title. It'll be hard, but looking forward to watching it. And then she goes off to college to play volleyball next year. So exciting times.
What's the club name? Who are we rooting for this week?
We are rooting for the Ducks. Rooting for the Ducks. Yes.
Okay. Go Ducks.
Go Ducks.
Go Volleyball Ducks.
Go
Ducks can be
no Anaheim Ducks.
Yeah, it can be a bit of a slur in this market, so we don't like to say that. But yes, go Volleyball Ducks. I like that. So it's good to have you back in Alberta. You are in Edmonton, where I bet you if you were to run into an Oilers fan and ask them about Stuart Skinner's performance on Wednesday night in Game 1 of the Western Conference Final, you would not be getting glowing reviews about his third period. That was quite the collapse or quite the comeback, depending on which side you want to look at it at. And it all started with a Miro Heiskanen power play goal early in the third period through a screen to make it 3-2 that started that five-goal comeback from the Dallas Stars. And that's kind of where we wanted to start, was that goal that made it 3-2, the power play goal against. What happened there, Kev, and kind of how did things unravel from there?
Well, I mean, first off, I'll just rewind a little bit. When you have the 16 out of 16 ranked penalty kill in terms of underlying numbers and high danger chances against, probably not a good idea to take as many penalties as the Oilers did in the third period and leading into the third period. They are dead last in underlying numbers on the penalty kill. And so that is not a great place to start. But for sure, I know there was a lot of criticism and the fourth goal sort of looked funky and ugly. But to me, the first goal, you know, not only does it sort of open the door and start the comeback, but it really is the one I could, you know, pick the most nits with. And it's because of the way he manages that screen. And this is a tendency, like when we do breakdowns on goalies, if you're breaking down Stuart Skinner, he doesn't do it all the time, but he tends at times to get a little passive behind screens and just sit right behind them and sort of rely on his size. And even though that's a little towards the middle of the ice up at the top, it's far enough to the left side. Everything in terms of traffic is in the middle lane. As a goaltender, you know, that is goalie 101. You got to be looking short side around that screen. And I heard Kelly Rudy talking about it in the post game afterwards, and he's bang on. And it goes double because it's Heiskanen. It's a left shot. About the only time you wouldn't take short side lane for your sight and you're prioritizing your coverage is if it's a right-handed shot. But with a left-handed shot at the point, at the left point, even if he's shading towards the middle, you've got to find a sight line on the short side. Sitting behind the traffic there, to me, that, like I said, that's simple stuff. That's basics. That's goalie 101. And real easy to say from my couch, like when bodies are flying around in front of you, it's hard to do. But you've heard me talk about, you know, screens are not just battle for sight lines, though sometimes they are. There are systems in place. And in front of him, everybody was in the right lane. You know, you don't have to worry about that puck going into the middle because there's five bodies there. So find a way to see the puck. And if you're picking a side, it's got to be short side lane there. It's just everything about that situation screamed to have a look over the right shoulder of everyone in front of you rather than sitting behind it. And so then you're able to, if it goes back the other way, you're shifting across into a butterfly, into a block if they throw it back to the left side. But you've got vision on it. You can see the release. And if he shoots it short side, which he did, you've got a chance to make a controlled save. What he ends up doing by being behind it is just going into a butterfly block, but in a lane where it would have hit something anyways. And it's not always that simple, because let's fast forward now to the third goal, which is another screen and the Granlund shot and the Robertson. And to me, that puck goes over his left shoulder as he's shifting off a short side lane into the middle, and it essentially, you could argue it looks like he's moving out of the way, but in that case, from a system standpoint and understanding how screens work, he did the right thing. That's a tip your hat to the way the Stars ran it, and a really good example of how complex traffic and screen, especially on the power play where shooters and screeners are working together. As that shot release, and there's a great angle I saw online today from behind Granlund where you can sort of see the lane open up. Wallman's got the far side lane. He's in the proper spot. Stewart's looking short side, and now Robertson drifts, what we call a moving screen or a flash screen. He's moving to the left. And so Skinner doesn't see the release. He shifts into the middle. And your assumption as a goaltender is, you know, like this is a calculated bet he's making. And the bet is, he's not going to shoot short side because Jason Robertson is in that lane. He's not going to hit his guy. And so you make that educated bet. You shift into the middle on that one. And Robertson and Granlund just worked it perfectly. Robertson is rolling out of that screen space just as the puck goes by. It was chef's kiss execution from an offensive screen standpoint, and that's one I don't blame him on, but that's a lot more complicated, complex situation. To me, the first one's really simple. The lane was there short side. You got to find it, and that's the one that starts the comeback.
It's been a I can't remember and last year wasn't a complete smooth sail for Skinner en route to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final either. And yet this year, here we are one game into the Final Four, and it has been as much a roller coaster. Like, he gets pulled, and Calvin Pickard's the answer. Then he comes back, and we're talking about back-to-back shutouts. How would you kind of sum up all of what we've seen this postseason from Stuart Skinner?
Listen, some of this is on Stuart. I was just critical of the way he managed that first screen, right? And on the fourth goal, it's a lot of people didn't like. Like, I thought for sure there was contact going to his left. And if the puck had gone in off the initial move, I guarantee they would have challenged, because there was a skater in the crease that his pad intersects with. And that sort of gets him spun a little bit and a little bit out of control. The problem was the play continued for so long that he had time to reset. And if you look moving to his left, his first intuition as he loses the puck is to sort of almost like throw his shoulders up, like, hey, like, where's my call? Like, I'm being interfered with, rather than battling to get back to the post. And that slight delay, you know, if you review that, they're going to argue he had time to reset, and he didn't go right to a reset. There was a bit of a delay there. So it's been up and down, right? There is context there. You know, we talk a lot about goaltending not existing in a vacuum. And to me, the context is important. They were a disaster defensively, those first two in L.A., that ultimately cost him the starting job. And we talked about this before, right? He didn't make enough big saves on high-danger chances. They gave up too many, and he didn't bail them out. That's what Calvin Pickard did, especially in the next three against L.A. But there's been this wild fluctuation. Like, when the first two periods looked fine. Everything was controlled in front of him. It's when it gets chaotic. And so, does he start chasing? Does he stay within his posts? I thought the last two games against Vegas, he did a really good job of. Very rarely did you see him splayed out on his stomach. Very rarely did you see him outside of his lanes, outside of his posts, east-west in terms of depth and depth management, as opposed to north-south. And honestly, I thought for the most part he was last night too, until that fourth goal. That was the first time it looked chaotic and scrambled to me. So I actually don't have a problem with his game. Again, you've got the worst ranked penalty kill in the playoffs. Probably not a good idea to take needless penalties. Kulak, one I can forgive. That's just hard defending. The other two, yep. I mean, a high stick, a cross check to the face by repeat offenders, right? So I know the attention's going to be on him, but when they play defensively the way they did during last year's playoffs, he's given them the goaltending they need. The composure element, and maybe there's, you know, maybe it starts. Like, maybe they start running around because they don't have faith. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's why they start to get scrambly in those situations. But when they play a composed game in front of him, and he's able to sort of go spot to spot and not have to manage too much off the rush, he's fine. It's just there's been so much Jekyll and Hyde in their defensive game as a group throughout this playoff, and they're not built to have the goalie be the one that they rely on to bail them out. It's fair to ask it, but it's not really how they're set up.
Any, like, would you be thinking about going to another goalie in game two, or is that way too premature?
No. If Pickard was available, maybe, because he gave, I mean, six straight wins, right? But honestly, like again, like when you look at what happened in that third period, it got messy and ugly on the fourth goal, and maybe there was a hesitation there. Had no problem with the, you know, we just talked about the Robertson screen. And the other one, like, as much as I'd like him to manage that screen different, it's still a, you know, like a 3 or 4 person screen. It's a pileup. It's, you know, it's a huge, it's like a traffic accident happening in front of you. Yeah. It's not as easy as I just made it out. Like I said, real easy on my couch to be like short side lane, in the moment. You'd like them to find it, but it's not as easy as I'm making it sound. So, yeah, listen, like, the first two periods, I thought he made a lot of really controlled saves. In a controlled environment, he made it look easy. They need to find a way to have more of those and less penalty kill time,
or they need to find a way to not have the worst underlying numbers of any team in the playoffs on the penalty kill.
Yeah. Kevin Woodley is with us. He's our goaltending expert in Goal Magazine and NHL.com. He joins us Thursdays on Flames Talk. Logo.
Kev, sorry that you have to be in Edmonton, but good to chat with you again. You and me chatted last week about the Winnipeg Jets. Their season's done in heartbreaking fashion. And again, a lot of the narrative after the series was about Connor Hellebuyck. And as you and me have discussed a couple of times, it wasn't necessarily Connor Hellebuyck that changed. It was the environment around him defensively that changed a lot for the Jets.
Yeah, you know, and listen, like the first round, he wasn't good either. Like the environment, the bottom fell out of it, but he still underperformed it. And in a more controlled environment, he outperforms it at a level that gets you Vezina trophies. But when it got chaotic, he didn't find a way. So he, like, I guess what I'm saying is the environment changes, but even if he performed relative to it, at the rate he did during the regular season in the first round, I don't think there's as much conversation. So it got a lot harder, and he struggled behind it. Both things can be true. Now, flash forward to the second round against the Dallas Stars, and this, you know, I don't have his raw numbers in front of me, but I think they're sub 900. And so, and obviously the home and road split, we did an article on that over at Ingle, sort of what we call a myth buster. When everybody talks about Connor Hellebuyck can't win on the road, how much of it is true and how much of it is the team in front of him? And we went through the numbers. Would it surprise you guys to know that in the second round of the playoffs against the Dallas Stars, Connor Hellebuck's adjusted save percentage, so how he performed relative to the shot quality in front of him, was actually significantly better than it was during the regular season, for which he's going to win a Vezina trophy and might win the Hart? Would that surprise you?
Yeah.
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 Just kind of looked at Pat and was like, yeah, you kind of would. Yeah.
Guys, that's what the numbers say. Like, and they're objective, right? Like, this is independent. There's no subjectivity here. The bottom fell out. And there's two parts to this conversation, right? Like, and the one part is the bottom fell out. He went from a 903 expected save percentage in the regular season to in the 870s in the second round of the playoffs, 865 on the road, right? Like, for whatever reason, he wasn't the only one that struggled on the road. Everything in front of him cratered. And I thought he got better on the road as that series went on. Thought he was fine in game seven, right? Like if Mason Appleton executes on an open net and doesn't throw it right back into Jake Ottinger's coverage, I mean, Ottinger has less than half the net covered and Appleton throws it back into him, we're having a different conversation. But at the end of the day, the environment in front of him changed significantly. In the second round, he outperformed it at the same rate that he did in the regular season. Huh. So to me, that says we need to take a look at more than just Connor Hellebuyck when it comes to the playoffs. But if I'm throwing and again, I'm in Edmonton, so the people that take away your goalie union cards can't find me here. So I'm going to say this now. The other grain of salt we have to have is that 903 expected save percentage in the regular season was top three in the league. Like, we also have to recognize that environment in the regular season was very goalie friendly. And so as much as he is full, and he outplayed it for sure, and he is 100% deserving of the Vezina trophy. And again, straight to the Hall of Fame. Once he got three, like, that's a do not pass go. Yep. Do not collect $200. You're a Hall of Famer. But goal saved above expected, he was second in the league. Darcy Kemper was actually slightly ahead of him. I still say you give the Vezina to Hellebuyck. But when we start talking about these numbers, there is very little about it when you adjust for environment that screams Hart trophy. And yet, with all due respect to my peers, I'm not in the PHWA Professional Hockey Writers Association because I work for the league. But the raw numbers are so compelling that when I talk to people now, like, I feel pretty confident he's going to win the Hart. And his numbers relative to the last time we had a goalie in the mix, which was Shesterkin, like, they're not even close. Mm-hmm. And it's not his fault, but that was a really good defensive team. So, like, I feel like the hype that surrounded him as a Hart Trophy finalist, because he led the league in all these raw number categories, like save percentage and goals against and shutouts and all those things, almost made it harder for people to see the forest for the trees
when it came to playoff time, because all they were looking at was the same raw numbers and not taking into account in both directions that goaltending rarely exists in a vacuum and environment matters. And it was as easy as any in the league in the regular season and as bad as any in the league in the playoffs.
And just before we let you go, I'm curious kind of what the numbers are telling you on a couple of guys who are still playing right now, and they've got the 1-0 series leads. Playoff Bob, Sergei Bobrovsky in Florida, and Jake Oettinger in Dallas.
See, I'm starting to have to – I think the hard part about playoff guys is it's such a small sample, right? Like we're like – what are we, like 10, 11, 12 games in, right? Like – I would normally tell you guys at the start of a season that numbers don't start to normalize for goaltenders until we hit 20 games. Like each one of these guys that's left is a three-game stinker or a three-game heater from completely changing the narrative, including on their adjusted numbers. So you have to keep that in mind. At the end of the day, though, Jake Oettinger was league average in the first round. Now, some of that may be the fact the guys were shooting on him, you know, including scoring on looks that would be categorized as low danger because they're straight on. Are guys like McKinnon, who can take a low danger chance and make it high danger because he's one of the best shooters in the league, and it doesn't get factored into this math. Right. So, you know, maybe Oettinger gets judged harshly because of that. But at the end of the day, over the last three regular seasons, he's been right around just slightly above league average. Again, Dallas has a great defensive environment. When it mattered in the second round, he took a step. I talked about Hellebuck's numbers relative to expected. Oettinger outperformed him. Easier environment in the 900s, like Hellebuck's was in the regular season, but he was like plus 2.3%, which that over a year wins you a Vezina trophy. So he was really good. And I think Bob, after a really, like, Sergei Bobrovsky is below expected on save percentage right now for the playoffs as a whole. And it doesn't matter because when it came down to crunch time, he played his best against the Toronto Maple Leafs, and that was enough. Maybe this is a different conversation, however. The first two games were not pretty by the numbers or by the video. And the third game, he got away with one that wasn't that great either. Maybe if he doesn't get away with that one in game three, we're having a different conversation. But at the end of the day, I think what we're seeing here is it's either A, the ability to rise to the occasion when the pressure gets most, so down the stretch in games 4, 5, 6, and 7, or in Oettinger's case, like last in game one last night, he ends up below expected. A couple of those shots, I mean, they're straight lines, they're low danger chances, but again, we're talking about elite shooters. So I think he gets punished maybe more than he should by the numbers. This is what happens in small sample sizes. But you saw, even in the moments where Edmonton controlled play and created a little bit of chaos in front of him, there's a floor there for him where, yeah, you can maybe get him to chase outside of his post a little bit from time to time, but he's so big, he's so controlled, he does so many things well enough that even when he's not at 100%, he keeps his team in it. And then he does have that other layer that in big moments we saw against the Winnipeg Jets. Like, yeah, hey, like Appleton shot that back into him, but he didn't just dive across in desperation. He got early eyes across, recognized that Appleton wasn't right, shooting right away, and rather than going Superman on it, he waited and he reacted to it. So, like, there are things that sometimes – even I can get caught up in the numbers and lose, you know, a clear sight, pardon the pun, for clear sight analytics, of just how good these guys are in the key moments. And maybe that's what matters the most in the playoffs. It's not about being below expected 12 games in, as when it mattered the most, you came up with a couple of momentum-changing saves for your team that kept them in early in a series game or save them late in the series. And I think we all know how good Oettinger and Bob can be. So it doesn't matter what the math says. Mm-hmm. Ottinger's been better and is climbing the ranks as the playoffs have gone on. Bob hasn't yet. But does that mean anyone's counting him out or thinking he's not good? No, because he's able to deliver in key moments. Just ask the Tampa Bay Lightning. A couple of saves he made in that first round. You know, they get lost overall in the numbers, but they were momentum and game-changing saves, and they tilted the ice in the favor of the Florida Panthers in a quick series.
Get out of here, Kev. Appreciate the insight. As always, my friend, we will do it again next week. Hey, enjoy and go Ducks. Enjoy the Nationals. Enjoy Edmonton as much as you can.
Yes, this is my last. This is my last weekend of cheering Go Ducks. Starting in the fall, it will be Go Vulcans for the University of Hawaii at Hilo. So I will still get to be a volleyball dad, but I am Go Ducks this weekend, and then we switch gears.
Man, those trips should be funner than the ones to Edmonton, eh?
Tough break having to go to Hawaii, eh?
I know. Like, she had offers in Vermont and Hawaii. I'm like,
Hawaii.
Yeah, like, sweetie, you do whatever you think is the most important, and then basically, cough, Hawaii, like subliminal messages the whole time.
Good stuff, pal. Enjoy your time this weekend, and we will talk to you next week. Thanks, Kev.
Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the hockey. We'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. Kevin Woodley, In Goal Magazine, NHL.com on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery. As we start to wrap things up this hour, Logan Gordon on Twitter at Fan960. Logan, Shan, Cam, Riley, our outstanding producers this hour. And this hour wraps up. It's been the Sports Drive. Brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. The moving sale's on now. Save big on safes, smart locks, keypads, and more. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.